Enterprise Management 360, your main source for tech news, analysis, podcasts, and videos for the enterprise.
Hello, everyone. I'm Paulina Rios Maya, head of podcast production here at EM360. In addition to overseeing the production of our podcast, I'm passionate about security, intelligence, and the latest trends in technological innovation. Today, I'm joined by Tom Tovar, CEO and co-creator of Appdom, and Richard Steenan, Chief Research Analyst at IT Harvest, to discuss the impact of SolarWinds breach on DevSecOps. Thank you for being here. Let's begin with you, Tom. I know you began your career as a corporate and securities attorney, so you're probably very familiar with the Securities and Exchange Commission,
otherwise known as SEC.
Could you tell us about the indictment of SolarWinds?
Yeah, thanks for that, and thanks to everyone who's listening. Yeah, so I did. I spent my formative years as a corporate and securities lawyer, so I spent a lot of time with the SEC and helping companies navigate it. I'm fascinated by this case and everything that's surrounding it. You know, the SEC's complaint from a securities perspective is fairly straightforward. You know, they're alleging that the SolarWinds as a company and the chief information security officer committed what they call, you know, fraud through misstatements, omissions, what they classify as schemes to conceal the company's poor cybersecurity state and from investors and customers and others. And so that's really what they're charging. It's they're looking at how did SolarWinds disclose the state of its cybersecurity policies or its cybersecurity state, and whether or not those measured up to the public statements that they made in filings with the SEC or with statements on the website or other pledges that they made in public areas. So it's a fascinating, fascinating case. So yeah, so that's kind of it in a nutshell. And Richard, I think you've probably been following this as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I really appreciate how you highlighted that, and quite often this is the case when a federal regulator or even the Justice Department brings a case, it's not, you know, fining or indicting SolarWinds for having bad security, even though they may have. It is for the way that they talked about that and assured people that they had good security that has gotten them in so much trouble.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's actually, there's three things there that are good to kind of keep in mind. On the one hand, it's, you're right. The DevSecOps process at SolarWinds isn't in question. In fact, the SEC went so far as to kind of highlight all the things that that SolarWinds had done from a DevSecOps perspective, to really do kind of standard security testing, vulnerability assessments, penetration testing, et cetera. The challenge is that through that process, they became aware, according to the SEC, they became aware of significant deficiencies in the state of their cybersecurity posture, and they failed to either act to remediate it or disclose it when it became kind of an issue. And so I think there's kind of like three things going on there. On the one hand, you know, discovering it and failing to solve it, two, disclosing it, and then when the actual attack happened, failing to remediate that attack and resolve that and or disclose it as well. So there's kind of three things going on. There's some other things from a corporate and securities law perspective, like there were some trades that were going on during that time, which obviously is a bad thing if you're trading while you're going through this and you're not disclosing something material. That's a separate topic. But from the standpoint of just SolarWinds and its DevSecOps practices, that's not being litigated. What's being litigated is the response to what they found in that process and whether they did what was right or not in the context of investors and customers and, you know, employees, shareholders, et cetera. That's the issue.
I think part of the community, or a large part of the community, feels sympathy for SolarWinds and the CISO because, after all, the attacker was the SRV of Russia,
right?
Which, of course, is their spy agency, equivalent to our NSA. And, you know, who among us could defend ourselves effectively against such an attacker? But once again, the SEC isn't litigating that. They're litigating the things that they have jurisdiction for, which is how this relates to disclosures.
Yeah, I mean, we all have sympathy for the CISO for sure. The reality from a securities perspective is that as an executive at a public company, you're required to sign what's called attestations for public statements that you make in filings. So the challenge that, you know, a CISO of a publicly traded company has is that they're required to sign off on the statements that are made publicly. So, you know, and they have a process that they go through if they don't agree with the statements in order to raise it to the cybersecurity committee of the board, change disclosures, work with the legal team or what have you. So I think the SEC is going to have a lot to say on that topic, and something obviously for us all to be paying attention to, certainly if you're a CISO of a public company, like what's in those attestations and so forth.
Right. Tom, let me interrupt you here a little bit. I saw also that in 2023, the SEC issued a 4-day cyber incident disclosure rule. Could you tell us a little bit of how this looks in practice?
Yeah, it's a great question. So the 4-day rule came out actually before SolarWinds. I think SolarWinds is a way for the SEC to kind of put a exclamation point or a period on the 4-day rule. But in essence, what the 4-day rule says is that companies have to disclose using a process called an 8K filing, which is a material disclosure, you know, out of cycle material disclosure, 8K filing. They have to use the 8K process to disclose any cybersecurity incident that either has had what's called a material impact or is reasonably likely to have what's called a material impact on the business. Now, there's all kinds of case law on what material impact means. I'm not going to give anybody legal advice. Talk to your lawyer about that. But for our purposes, it means big. So is this incident going to have a material or big impact on the business, or is it reasonably likely to have a big impact on the business? If the answer is yes, you got to disclose it in an 8K filing. The interesting thing is that in the rule, the SEC doesn't define what incident means, that word incident. But in SolarWinds, they make it very clear that incident can not only mean an actual attack, you know, an actual cybersecurity attack on the network or the business, but it can actually mean a pattern of inaction that results from a DevSecOps process. So in other words, if you've got DevSecOps process and that's got finding after finding after finding after finding, and you're not remediating that in a timely manner, the SEC has taken the position that at some point that becomes an incident and you need to disclose it. When it becomes quote unquote bad enough that it's reasonably likely to have a big impact on your business, you have a four-day rule requirement that kicks in and you've got to do an 8K. And believe me, filing an 8K is no small thing because obviously it has large impacts on public stock price and valuations and all kinds of other things. So it's a very, very, very kind of significant thing that's happened. And I think a lot of organizations are wrestling with that just because of the time frame, the tight time frame that they have to either resolve the issue so they can get away from disclosure, or, you know, disclose it and do so in a way that doesn't tank their stock. So it's a really, really big thing. And SolarWinds obviously didn't do that. They had so many year after year of DevSecOps findings and internal dialogue about vulnerabilities and so forth. And they didn't act to solve that. And that's where the SEC is coming in and saying, hold on a second, you know, you knew, you should have known. And then on top of that, you had an attack and you didn't disclose it properly under the rule. So,
right. Very interesting. I think now that you're talking a little bit about the legal stuff and the SEC, maybe you could give a little bit of context to our audience on the breach itself. What happened in SolarWinds?
Yeah, so the breach was really interesting. So I know the SEC termed it a supply chain attack, but it's not really a supply chain attack. A supply chain attack happens when an attacker takes exploits of vulnerability in a third-party system connected to the organization's backend or infrastructure. Here, there was no exploit of a third-party vulnerability. In fact, You had an unmanaged mobile device, a BYOD mobile device, connected to a VPN, which is connected to the infrastructure of the organization. A fairly common setup for any enterprise mobility BYOD device. There was no vulnerability in the VPN, but what happened was the policies of SolarWinds did not do any kind of device or integrity checks prior to allowing the application or the device to connect to the VPN and to the infrastructure. So what happened was attackers installed malware on the device, on this BYOD device. When it connected to the VPN, the attackers connected to the backend through the VPN, just like everybody else. And they, over the course of several months, installed various packages into SolarWinds. First, very benign, doing nothing, just to see if they're detected, and then increasingly more malicious over time. When SolarWinds discovered this, obviously they had a security incident, a cyber incident under the 4-day rule. They didn't disclose it, even though their customers were being impacted by it. And when they came out with their disclosure in an 8K filing, they made two mistakes. Number one, they did not disclose that customers were impacted by it, and they did not, in that 8K, say that they had remediated the attack in any way. So as we all know, the stock took a 40% hit. You know, all the press got wind of it. You know, it was like fire, you know, flies to fire, so to speak, you know, and all the kind of, you know, ensuing events happened afterwards. So it actually started from an unmanaged mobile device.
Right. I mean, we know that it was a pretty big thing. And we know that DevSecOps processes at SolarWinds work the same way it works everywhere, you know, to highlight cyber deficiencies that need to be addressed. Richard, as a go-to authority on internet and cybersecurity, can you tell us what does the SolarWinds breach mean for DevSecOps? And what are the main difficulties in integrating security using DevSecOps?
Yeah, great question and a big question. I think there's good and bad about this, because on the bad side, obviously, there's going to be more fear and trepidation and reporting requirements and basically paperwork, something that developers and certainly operations teams don't want to do, right? They want to get the job done, get their software tools up and running and working and all the features tested, and it's all good. We say DevSecOps a lot, but Sec is a very tiny portion. And frankly, in 99% of the companies I talk to, it's an after-the-fact security check. And it sounds like at SolarWinds, there's a lot of checkboxes going on, as well as, you know, we just say, okay, well, we know that, and thank you for reporting it, but we're going to release it anyways. That sort of thing is going to be impacted dramatically. Now, on the good side is that it means it elevates the importance of the security portion of DevSecOps. Once people become cognizant of the fact that they have to comply with regulations from multiple sources, including the SEC, then they'll start focusing on making sure the products that they're shipping have proper security built into them. And once you're doing that, then you have to make sure that the processes are there. So you are actually going to start shifting left, because it's less expensive to do it early in the process than after the fact, which is how most organizations I talk to are doing it.
Right.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that, Richard. I think there's a couple of other things, just again, to put my former legal hat on. And again, I'm not giving anybody legal advice, is that I think in addition to shift left, it's going to put a lot more emphasis on the delivery role of cyber, getting security into the software that we deliver out to our users. You know, not just compliance and waivers and so forth. In fact, you know, risk acceptance waivers, which has long been a part of the DevSecOps process, I think is going to see a decline as we move forward. I mean, the SEC actually took all of the risk acceptance waivers that SolarWinds had produced from its DevSecOps process and essentially said, hey, look, I have evidence here that you knew and you didn't do anything. And it's right here. And at one point they said in the complaint that it was clear from the risk acceptance waivers that the need to increase the cybersecurity posture of the company and its products had, quote, outstripped engineering's ability to deliver. So they had made a point of saying, of going to those and saying, hey, look, you know, you can't just get out of this by doing risk acceptance waivers and showing that you're being a good corporate citizen and maybe there's mitigating factors. What they're actually saying is, no, you're responsible for delivering, you know, that security that you promised in your public statements, in your website and whatever. You're required to deliver those for the benefit of your customers and users, employees, et cetera. So I think it's going to change DevSecOps, and I think you're right. Hopefully it's going to lead to better DevSecOps, more DevSecOps, and more shift left, not just from a scanning perspective, but from a delivery perspective as well.
It totally will. And at the same time, you've got CISA and other federal agencies pushing for better DevSecOps. But I do want to caveat, and I'll get on my high horse here, in that for enterprises, you know, the consumers of all these software products, do not rely on your software vendors doing a better job. You know, yes, they're going to invest in it. Long term, there'll be fewer of these things. But today, right now, you have no way of trusting that the software you're installing and accepting updates for is actually not been compromised by an attacker like the SRV. And I just encourage people to think about that. I've been thinking about it since SolarWinds. It's like, and I haven't seen a solution yet.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, you know, certainly in the case of mobile apps, things like that, you know, AppDome, we have a lot to do, you know, to help folks with that. But I do agree with you. You can't just assume that, okay, everybody's going to do a better job of this. You know, you need to take an active defense posture and be proactive in ensuring that, you know, even so much as not just relying on, you know, common defenses like, you know, VPN or SSL or whatever. Those are part of the security solution, not the total end all of the security solution to keep your network safe. So I agree with you 100%.
I want to jump in really quickly, both of us, kind of step back. I just heard you, Tom, talk about VPNs. It's clear that, you know, the installation of malware through VPNs within a bring your own device company policy, it's important to kind of realize that that's a problem. So could you discuss a little bit between ourselves, especially between you two, what are the potential implications for enterprise security practices regarding VPN access and bring your own device policies?
Yeah, Richard, would you like to take it first?
Yeah, I'll take it first since this is, you know, such an old problem. And I think there was a worm, might have been MS Blaster, that spread around the world. And it was solely, you know, most people got infected by somebody bringing an infected laptop into the office back when, you know, before we had VPNs, et cetera. And that only, you know, the attack surface is only extended, especially during COVID, when everybody's working from home and using their home computers, right? It's most companies aren't going to buy computers for all their people. Or if they do, they've still got both computers on the same home network. So it's easy for an attacker to get on the home computer. And then, you know, as the person uses the same wireless access point, to get onto the corporate device as well. And then the corporate device is granted access to everything through the VPN. I've written a book about how stupid this is. It falls into the zero trust category of things to think about is you should not trust any of those devices. You shouldn't trust them when they're on your network. You shouldn't trust them when they're VPNing in.
Yeah. I would say a couple of things. I would say for me, I agree with Richard. I'd almost go so far as to say the VPN is irrelevant in this equation. You know, VPN or no VPN by itself is not a defense.
Right.
I think BYOD is here to stay. It's only going to grow, certainly with COVID, with work from home, with remote work, with the gig economy, etc. I think BYOD devices are the norm, not the exception anymore. And I would say that, you know, traditional kind of integrity checking also has to evolve. You know, right now, the state of the art, at least before SolarWinds, an integrity check would be nothing more than jailbreak and root. And that's what you would test for. But these days, you have to look for a very complicated, I mean, you have Richard talking about worms, and you have Richard's also talking about nation state actors. And, you know, we haven't even talked about the class of malware that was used to carry out the attack. You know, you have things like remote access Trojans and all kinds of, you know, esoteric, you know, attacks like overlay attacks and keylogging, which is steal credentials and so forth. So I think this notion of integrity checks has to go away, and we have to expand that to include on-device malware and on-device threats that are beyond just compromises of the device operating system, right? The device operating system is just, that's the lowest form of attack. You know, you don't actually have to jailbreak or root a device in order to carry out some really, really malicious, you know, malware infestations or malware class attacks. So I do think, you know, I think the big change is going to be for enterprises, how do you add a level of malware resilience to your user base in order to protect it? And I think the same rule, by the way, applies to consumer-facing mobile applications as well. Although in consumer-facing mobile apps, you have to go a bit farther and you have to look at fraud, you have to look at social engineering, you have to look at a variety of other things to make sure that your users are safe. But either way, we all have to kind of go beyond the basics. We have to go beyond kind of the RASP, jailbreak and root type defenses, because they're outclassed by the current malware model that's out there.
Yeah.
I mean, it really does sound like Operation Iceland security manually at the end is not a great idea, you know? So I can't stop thinking about this question. And I want to ask both of your opinions on the role of cybersecurity post SolarWinds. What do you think about that?
I've got a thought on that, in that, you know, the lawyers are coming, you know, so cybersecurity is going to become a little more onerous. And we don't all have the pleasure of working with a Tom Tovar who actually understands it. So I would, you know, my advice is, you know, take advantage of the attention, you know, get the lawyers, you know, on your side, so they realize that you do need budget, you do need people, you need resources to address it. And they're going to have, you know, your internal teams, audit teams and risk teams are going to have a lot more sway, but they're also going to, you know, be on the side of security and better security, I hope.
Yeah, I think we got a couple of things going on. So I agree the lawyers are coming, and at least if from the SEC's perspective, they're kind of here already,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So you have to sort of enlist that discipline to certainly, you know, bolster your internal, you know, case to act and so forth. But I also think, you know, what SolarWinds is teaching me, and it's kind of maybe a little bit of a different take on it. I actually think, you know, a lot of the commentators are out there saying SolarWinds is gonna put a chilling effect on people taking the cybersecurity job and so forth. And I actually look at it the other way. I think SolarWinds is a boom for the cyber professional. In other words, I think that what SolarWinds is saying to the cybersecurity industry is, hey, what you do on a daily basis is important to investors, customers, users, employees, and the market as a whole. And don't surrender your place in the economy just to get an app out the door, just to get something published. That's too important. And if we really look at SEC's actions from that perspective, it's incredibly empowering. Now, the reality is SolarWinds, you know, the first company through the wall always gets a little bloody, but the outcome of it is, I think it's going to give us as a cyber community more chance to deliver on the promise of, you know, the best of breed, best of practice cybersecurity defenses for all of our users. That's
right.
What I think.
Hear, hear. I love that, Tom.
Well, certainly, I mean, it's obvious that there are technologies out there like Aptom that give this ability, you know, to all the CISOs to remediate without dependencies. And, you know, you talked a little bit about this, Tom, and I want to go back as a last question, perhaps. Could you both summarize to our audience, what are some of the best practices and how can organizations maintain this cyber resilience?
Should I start again? I guess we'll let Tom have the last word. so I, from the perspective of a con- a company that's consuming software products. You know, we've gotten the wake up call. Software products can't necessarily be trusted. We've gotten this many times, right? NotPetya was a malicious update to a MEDOC accounting package. It goes all the way back to 2004 and its attack on the telco in Athens during the Summer Olympics. So if you can't trust your software, you know, from your vendors, you know, we're talking whoever it is, Oracle, Microsoft, Adobe, anybody that you use every day, we have to rethink the advice that every security pundit in the world says, which is patch immediately. Everything has to be up to date. You know, find the vulnerabilities and patch them. We actually have to wait to install updates. Don't be patient zero. And sandbox it when you do. And check it to see if it's communicating with command and control servers. Do a bunch more tests than you used to do before you accept software updates.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I would say probably the best advice that I could give, and it jumps out in the SEC's complaint against SolarWinds CISO, is that you have to adopt technology platforms that allow you to control the delivery of cyber defense in your applications, whether they're web apps, cloud apps, or mobile apps. You have to have control over the delivery. If you don't control the delivery and there are too many dependencies on delivering that defense or those defenses or to respond to an attack or what have you, and you're forced into an old world of DevSecOps where you discover and wave away, you know, put your head in the sand and wave away kind of what the proper DevSecOps process found, you're just getting yourself into, you know, quicksand that you can't get out of. So adopt technologies, adopt platforms that allow you to deliver, you know, the protections that you need. And it can be different protections across each of the different classes of apps that you deploy, depending upon what's in those apps and how they're used and who they're used by. But have a centralized control point where you can build processes and centers of excellence and deliver on the cyber objective yourself without, you know, going cap in hand to other groups. I mean, obviously, you know, at AppDome, we do that on the mobile side and give cyber teams the power to deliver any class of defense they need in mobile apps. But there may be other products out there for other parts of the ecosystem, cloud apps, web apps, et cetera. No matter what, the four-day rule isn't going away. So you've only got a very short window to remediate or disclose what's happening inside your business. So if you're not in control of that, you're going to be in a difficult place as it comes to the SEC, your investors, employees, and others. So make sure you do that. And if you do that, I think everything's going to be fine. And again, I think it's a very empowering message for us, all of us, to kind of be more of a line instead of just a checkbox or a compliance organization, be a line function where we're really adding value to the business and every user that touches our apps.
Well, thank you so much, Tom and Richard, for this wonderful conversation. We really appreciate your wonderful insights on this topic. I'm sure our listeners took a lot away from today's podcast, and most importantly, the importance of an app like AppDome. That wraps up another EM360 podcast episode. Whether you're sipping your morning coffee or winding down after a long day, we hope this episode sparked thoughts and provoked some questions. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe on all major platforms. Follow the conversation on our socials at EM360 Tech on X and LinkedIn. And for more great content, head on over to em360tech.com.